everybody. Welcome to episode 24 of the 2QB Experience. This is the Brian Hoyer Experience. Josh has the week off, so I'm joined today by a different host. His name is Brian Malone. He's a writer at RotoViz, Dynasty League Football, and of course, 2QBs.com. Brian can be found on Twitter at BrianMaloneFF. Brian, how you doing?
Doing well. So far, Ryan Fitzpatrick has not thrown an interception, so it's been a good night for him. We're about 7 minutes into Monday Night Football, though.
It's early. It's only a matter of time. David Johnson has already scored, as is the norm as well. And we'll be kind of checking in on that game as we go through. But, you know, as usual here on the 2QB Experience, we're going to talk about, you know, kind of what we saw in week six. We got Brian Hoyer as the spotlight. Then we'll look ahead to week seven and a little bit beyond. I realized now, of course, that I forgot to introduce myself. My name is Greg Smith, at Greg Sauce on Twitter. And you can find all my work at 2QBs.com. Speaking of the site, Brian, your Noise and Signal Callers article is one of my favorites every week, and I just want you to kind of check in, tell people what that's about. You had some good calls this week. You had optimism for Case Keenum, Andy Dalton, Dak Prescott, and you kind of you had the intuition to fade Carson Wentz, Tannehill, Flacco, and Alex Smith. Tell the folks a little bit about what that series is about.
So it's basically somewhere between one and two, three, four facts about each quarterback. Pretty stats heavy, and I just go through and whatever strikes me is interesting for the week. So it could be team matchups, it could be streaks that a player is on, it could be certain defensive matchups, and we go through those and try to get a just push people, nudge them one way or the other on every quarterback.
But tell us a little bit about how your season's going in general. You know, have you had any big like revelations this year or any big hits or misses you want to highlight?
I think the last time I was on here I was Well, it was the Tony Romo experience, so that didn't really go very well. But I was also chiding you guys for not being high enough on Blake Bortles, and so far I look wrong on that one.
Yeah, he's a guy I was not a big fan of, but I was a big fan of Romo, so you know, so it goes, right? I think the last time you were on, you also chided us for not knowing anything about Woody Allen movies, and I haven't gotten any better in that respect either. But let's jump into the Week 6 review. Let's start with the big two quarterback news, and that's Ben Roethlisberger tearing his meniscus. He had a meniscotomy. I wish I could pronounce that word. Meniscectomy.
That sounds
I think
right.
That's better. He had that today, Monday. They're saying that the return time could be quick, that he could be back as soon as week 9. But we are going to get 1 week of Landry Jones at least. What do you think about this situation? Are you just all out on the Steelers, Brian, or are you looking to maybe finagle some value out of this situation?
No, Landry Jones is a desperation-only play, and it I think it knocks down everybody except maybe probably Le'Veon Bell retains his value, but all the other pass catchers, Antonio Brown's the only one I'm even considering now, and you'll start him, but you're not going to be happy about it.
Yeah, we don't really have a good sample size on Landry Jones. He only played the two games last year, finishes the QB21 and the QB27 in each of those. He only averaged about 10 fantasy points per game. I'm with you. I don't really want any piece of him unless I'm the Roethlisberger owner and I just need to get that handcuff for my team. But I think this is kind of a dagger in the back of Steelers fans and, you know, Steelers fantasy owners. Anything else on Roethlisberger? Do you expect him to be back sooner rather than later? He's kind of done that in the past.
Yeah, all the buzz seems to be fairly positive. There's a Dr. Jeff Budoff at RotoViz with the limited information he has seemed like everything was trending the right direction. So I'm hopeful that he'll be back in week 9.
Yeah, you and me both. It wouldn't surprise me if he, you know, missed maybe one extra week because they do have a bye week in the middle there too. But, you know, fingers crossed he's back sooner rather than later because fantasy is better when that offense is firing on all cylinders. Let's move on here. Let's talk about the Miami Dolphins and Jay Ajayi just breaking loose for a huge game on Sunday. But the question I have for you is this, Brian, what are we supposed to do with Arian Foster?
So I'm not dropping him. I think, you know, all the reasons we liked him before are still there. He's still the best pass protector. He's still probably the best receiver. He's clearly the inferior runner, but we knew that coming in. I think it would take an Ajayi injury at this point for him to have serious value, but that's not out of the question. And he's a fairly high-end backup running back. So if you're rostering backup running backs, I think Arian Foster should be one of those.
Yeah, I think that maybe what we saw yesterday might have been like an artifact of the game flow. I mean, Damian Williams actually got more work than Arian Foster, It's just that the Dolphins were in control from basically the second quarter on in that game. So it doesn't surprise me that maybe they, you know, held Foster back a little bit, didn't give him a whole lot of touches, because they were already winning the game without him. They didn't really need to, you know, use him anymore in that capacity. So that's my general takeaway with Foster. I think that we shouldn't let this one game be super indicative of how we value him going forward. I think they signed him for a reason. They want him to be their back, and I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Moving on to another player who just came back, and this is for a different reason. That's Colin Kaepernick. He looked a little rusty yesterday, but he did deliver some solid fantasy production. I mean, mostly thanks to his running ability, as you might suspect. How do you value Kaepernick going forward, Brian?
I value him still as a low-end, well, maybe a mid-to-low quarterback too, right? So, I mean, he's running about as much as Blaine Gabbert. He's just better at it. You know, I'm not sure he's that much better of a passer than Gabbert. So, you know, he might get a couple extra points per game based on his rushing ability. But I'm not excited about him, but I'm certainly, you know, he's going to be in a lot of lineups, because he is a quarterback too.
Yeah, and what you said about his passing ability is kind of what hits home for me. When I was watching that game yesterday, you could kind of see that his accuracy just still wasn't there. He's just not a very accurate thrower. I mean, even that big touchdown pass to Torrey Smith was one that he kind of just threw up, and Smith had to completely alter his route and come back to get it. It was not a pretty play by any means. It wasn't like, you know, some of those Roethlisberger bombs to Sammy Coates we've been seeing in the past couple weeks. I worry about Kaepernick having some dud weeks going forward, just like he did in the past. But that rushing floor that he offers is something that, as fantasy owners, we can't ignore. You really have to, I think, keep an eye on him as that, you know, QB2 with potential for big weeks. Like, and we'll talk more about him later. So we'll stop there. I want to talk about some non-quarterbacks here next, and I'm just going to list a few guys here: Lamar Miller, Odell Beckham, Brandon Cooks, Golden Tate. All these guys, quote unquote, got right in week six, and I'm wondering what you think about this group of guys, Brian. Do you think they're all back on track with where we expected them to be in the preseason? Should we be trying to sell any of them based upon these recent breakouts?
So Miller and Beckham, I think they're exactly where I thought they would be, and I'm not trying to sell them. Beckham, I think I bought him in one dynasty league. I was trying in another, so I was pretty happy to get him before the return to form. Miller, he's been getting the touches, he's been getting the yards, he finally got the touchdowns, so he's exactly where I thought he should be. Brandon Cooks is who he looks like, what I thought he would be, which is a boomer bust guy. I wrote this over the offseason. Last year, 48% of his PPR fantasy points came on plays of 20 yards or more, and that was higher than almost anyone. The only ones that were higher were Sammy Watkins and James Jones, and he's looking like the exact same guy. So I'm not selling him because I don't have him anywhere, but I'm certainly not buying him as a wide receiver one. You know, you're going to get games like this, and you're going to get games like weeks two and three where he just is pretty quiet.
Yeah, I think it is a little easy to say that the elite guys, Miller and Beckham, will be fine, but I agree with you. I think you kind of have to. I mean, that's what I'm going to say too, is I still want both of those guys on my rosters. I'm not trying to get rid of them. And your point about Cooks is well taken as well. I worry that his value often is tied a little bit too much to Drew Brees. So not only in addition to those big plays you're talking about, you also have to look at the home road splits that offense has and kind of adjust your evaluation of him accordingly. You can't just take one big game like this in a vacuum and expect that every week. I think that Golden Tate's the hardest guy to peg. The preseason expectations with him were relatively high, but the early season performance seemed like it was a little bit beyond, you know, regression being the savior. You know what I mean? Like, it seemed like maybe he was just not quite as good as we wanted him to be. I'm still more inclined to believe that he'll be in that 7 to 10 target range every week, and sometimes possibly more targets than that, rather than like that 4 to 6 range we saw in weeks 3 to 5. But I have no idea what to do with Golden Tate.
I think Riddick being out helps him. I mean, it seemed like Bolden came in and ate part of Golden Tate's lunch, and he just didn't have anywhere else to go for targets. There was a lot of guys in that same area of the field, and Riddick being out opened things up a little bit more for him. He's playing a little bit more of that short target guy and the run after catch guy, and he's better at it than Riddick, but he's not as versatile. Obviously, he can't line up in the back, or he doesn't often line up in the backfield. So I'm on him until Riddick is back, and then after that, it's going to be wait-and-see mode.
Well, that actually brings up another good point, and this is something that was kind of fascinating in the lead-up to Sunday's games was the signing of Justin Forsett and how he would be used in the offense. Like, I'm not surprised at all that they didn't use him because he had just signed that week. There's no way he's going to get into the playbook that quickly and be able to take away a large percentage of the carries from someone who's been there for a long time like Zach Center. But let's assume that Riddick is out again in week 7. What are you doing with Justin Forsett versus, I mean, the elephant in the room too is what's his name? Dwayne Washington. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be back. I mean, you've got Zenner, but yeah, I don't know if Washington's going to be back.
In general, the backfield's a mess, and that doesn't bode well for Tate, but just looking at the running backs alone, let's assume Washington and Riddick are out again. Do you expect Forsett to eat more into Zenner's workload in week 7?
Maybe a touch. I mean, I think people think of him as the pass-catching back, but he was actually really bad as a pass catcher in Baltimore. He got plenty of opportunities in that capacity, but everyone on that team was a better pass catcher than him, it seemed like. But I think he might be the best in Detroit, so maybe he's going to get a little bit more. I don't think he's going to be startable, and it's not like Zenner looked great either, so I think he's going to do enough to... I think he's going to do enough to make it that no one in that backfield has value until Washington comes back, and then we'll see what we have there.
Yeah, just kind of a train wreck altogether. Let's move on. Let's get back to the QBs. Let's talk about our two quarterback booms and busts of the week. Let's start off with a guy who, as I mentioned earlier, you had some good nuggets on in your week 6 article about, and that's Case Keenum. Again, just in the top 5 at the position. I think this is more of an indictment of the Lions defense than it is praise for Case Keenum, but you know, we've seen him put up 2 solid weeks at this point, in addition to some clunkers, don't get me wrong, but him and Mariota and Cody Kessler were all top 12 QBs in week 6. I don't think a whole lot of people saw that coming. Just looking at those three guys, are there any that you're buying going forward?
So Mariota, I mean, I thought he could be a top 12 QB going into the season, so I'm happy to get him if he's priced outside that range. He's got Indy coming up in week 7, so he's looking for another good performance, and after that, I don't know where he goes. But so I'm buying him. Keenum, you know, it's funny. I said only bad things about Keenum in that noise and signal colors, but I just ran out of bad things to say. So eventually I had to start saying good things about him. And I actually recommended streaming him over at RotoViz in 1QB leagues and as kind of a desperation move this week. And it turned out really well. So I think he's the QB2 or QB3 for the week so far. So I'm going to gloat about that one a little bit, but I mean, yeah, right. So like there's too many good quarterbacks and I don't think he's one of them. So he's still below. He's below like a guy like Kaepernick for me, even. But I'm much more comfortable plugging him into my lineup if I have to now. And much of it was, you're right, that Detroit defense. That was the main reason I recommended him this week. But it's nice to know that he's competent enough to put up numbers when he's supposed to.
Yeah, I'm with you on Mariota. He's another guy that I had some expectations for coming into the season. The schedule does look pretty good still, leading up to the Week 13 bye. One thing I was worried about coming into this past matchup with him was what was going to go on at the wide receiver position. We still hadn't seen anybody really, you know, take the reins as the wide receiver one, you know, not Rishard Matthews, not Tajae Sharpe, certainly not Andre Johnson, but Kendall Wright came back and had a really nice week. And I'm wondering if maybe he's the answer they were looking for. But again, it's hard for me to put too much stock into that theory based upon the defense they were facing. Even the week before when Mariota played well, they were against Cleveland in that game too. So this could just all be schedule related more than anything else.
Yeah. And I mean, Kendall Wright, it all came at the expense of Delaney Walker, it seemed like. So I don't know how much he's getting there. I mean, cause Delaney Walker was a good target in 2015 I don't know what's going to happen there, but it seems like Kendall Wright's the only wide receiver to put up a strong week so far for Tennessee. So he's got to be the odds on favorite at this point.
Yeah, and he had some buzz, you know, in previous seasons, you know, to be one of those, you know, kind of next good wide receivers, maybe not necessarily in the elite range, but maybe in that Jordan Matthews, Jeremy Maclin type of role. But we'll see how that goes. Again, I'm skeptical because we haven't seen him sustain that ever before, and because these past 2 matchups have been so soft. Let's get to the busts of the week, and I'm going to peg one guy, but there were a lot of options this week if you wanted to look for disappointing quarterbacks. I'll list the dishonorable mentions first. I have Aaron Rodgers, Derek Carr, Blake Bortles, and Alex Smith in that group. But for me, the biggest bust was probably Russell Wilson facing the Atlanta defense. And while the weather was a factor in that game, I still think we all had much higher hopes for Wilson, don't you say?
Oh, yeah. I was pretty disappointed with that. I was starting him widely, and I got bits and pieces of that game, but he just the offense didn't look good.
Yeah, and I don't really know what to do with Wilson going forward. He has not been easy to predict on a week-to-week basis, but looking at this whole crop of QBs, these guys who just kind of underperformed in week six, were any of them more disappointing to you than Wilson?
The one that I saw that it's really terrifying to me is Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he's got plenty of time to throw, and I don't know that it's all him. I think a lot of it is just, you know, his receivers aren't getting open, but man, he's forcing passes, he's inaccurate, he's overthrowing, he just looks bad. He looks un-Aaron Rodgers-like, so I don't know what's going on there. You know, Jordy seems fairly back to form, but Rodgers just doesn't have it, it seems, and that's pretty terrifying. Wilson, you know, has been inconsistent his whole career, but we just haven't seen Aaron Rodgers of old.
Yeah, he was the only one with a case for me when I really, you know, took it down to brass tacks. I mean, you can make excuses for the other guys, right? You know, Derek Carr had the toughest matchup playing against Kansas City. You know, I would argue, and we talked about this before, that Bortles probably never deserved the lofty expectations. I think he's just not very good. And Smith's ceiling is kind of limited by, you know, his abilities, and we can't really expect him to pass a ton when the Chiefs are just running all over the Raiders. So Rodgers was the biggest disappointment aside from Wilson to me. I think both those guys, you know, were drafted as top four, top three guys back in the preseason. And man, if we needed more evidence for late round QB to be, you know, more and more prevalent, these elite producers not producing is a pretty good indicator. Now, of course, that's all anecdotal. I'm cherry picking evidence here, but I am worried about Rodgers. Like you said, the game did not look good. I saw a lot of ugly screenshots on Twitter today of just all the receivers just blanketed. And that's against the Dallas Cowboys defense, which, you know, isn't a terrible defense, but they're not that good either. I mean, what happened to those receivers? I don't know.
They've always been asked to line up and beat their guy man to man, and just none of them are doing it anymore. And I'm not sure that Cobb ever did. But I think the other receivers did it well enough to open him up. But I don't know.
Are you a Janus truther?
I'm not a Janus truther. I mean, I sympathize with people who said, at this point, what do you have to lose? He's clearly an athlete. You know, if he's going to drop some balls, he's going to run some wrong routes, and that's going to frustrate Rodgers. But man, you got to do something. You got to change it up.
Yeah. Well, speaking of changing it up, the Chicago Bears changed things up a little while ago. Their hand was forced by an injury, but Brian Hoyer has been starting for them over Jay Cutler for quite some time. And he's our spotlight QB for the week. Let's start off with just some basic stuff, things that we both noticed from the game. I'll start off here. And one thing I noticed watching that game against the Jaguars yesterday was Hoyer's tendency to throw only short passes, or in addition to that, his lack of accuracy on deeper throws. I'm not sure if that was a game plan design or if it's a true limitation. It's probably both. But I was a little underwhelmed by Hoyer in that particular game. Now, in previous games, he looked a little better. I'll admit that. What was something you noticed, Brian?
What I noticed was his lack of time in the pocket. So in contrast to Rodgers, he never got, I mean, he was taking a lot of three-step drops and five-step drops, and the only time he had time to throw was off play action rolling out when he was outside the pocket. I mean, he never got a chance to look over the field, and I think that probably contributed to the short passing, though part of it just is, you know, he's not the best deep passer. So, yeah, a lot of manufactured touches. I want to say they had 10 screen passes. They're just getting their guys, getting Cameron Meredith and the running backs and letting them make plays in the open field.
Kind of on that note, we'll do a quick aside here. Do you think maybe we need to start respecting the Jacksonville defense a little bit more, as, you know, not as easy of a matchup for quarterbacks as we might have thought, you know, a few weeks ago?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think they've faced some reasonably good defense. Were you one of the people? There were people talking about it heading into this game that, you know, this isn't the cupcake that Hoyer's faced the last couple weeks, and they turned out to be right. Though he got his yardage, and that goes back to the other thing I noticed was So he was taking what the Jags defense gave him, which was usually short stuff, but then he got into the red zone and they clamped down because they didn't have to give any cushion, and there was just nothing there. He looked really bad in the red zone and was never had anybody open, was throwing into contested situations, and the running game didn't get going either, so they were pretty inept in the red zone.
Yeah, and I think that's the big takeaway for me with Hoyer, is that I do think he's strictly a matchups play going forward. We saw him put up really good numbers against Detroit and Indy, and I guess he did okay against Dallas in week 3, but when he had to face, you know, a better defense in Jacksonville, and it's weird saying that, a better defense in Jacksonville, but it just didn't look that good. And I mean, his upcoming schedule is kind of middling in that regard. Like, he has a couple, like, he has one tough matchup. He plays Minnesota in 2 weeks, but he's at Green Bay on a short week this week, then against Minnesota at home, then they have the bye, then they're back for Tampa Bay. Just kind of out of curiosity, what percentage chance would you give Jay Cutler of maybe starting again by that game against Tampa Bay after the bye?
I'd say probably 20-25%. I think he's worn out his welcome in Chicago. I don't think Fox cares for him much. I think Fox was happy with Hoyer's performance. To date, I haven't heard anything about what he said after this game. But I think he's also been in a tough spot, and he's done fairly well with it. The other thing, just thinking now about what I saw, is, you know, the short passing game is their running game, so he's going to get volume. So, you know, I'm not going to be happy to play him against Minnesota, but if Meredith or one of the running backs breaks a long play and he gets his touchdown, he's probably going to get his yardage just because he's going to be throwing a lot. So I think unless he completely melts down, I think he's going to hold on to that job.
Yeah, I'd actually set the odds even lower. I when I wrote down my notes for this, I said a 15% chance. So I'm with you. I think that they're done with Cutler. It seems we've talked about that in past episodes, so I won't go too much further into it. But you're right. They are definitely working to make the game plan work around Brian Hoyer. And I think if they're doing that, that means they've accepted Hoyer as their guy. You've talked about Meredith a little bit, a couple times, and his breakout at wide receiver is in full effect. You know, 20 catches, 27 targets, 240 plus yards and a touchdown in 2 games. It's his game simply suited better to Brian Hoyer's abilities than Alshon Jeffrey's?
You know, I'm a little worried that it is. I mean, so they manufactured a couple touches for Alshon, but there were, you know, I didn't see Hoyer throwing to the outside much, and, you know, Alshon's one of the best boundary receivers in the league, so yeah, it makes me a little nervous. But now I haven't watched every Hoyer game, so this is just off 1 week sample size, so maybe I'm missing something there. But based on, you know, the game plan last week, I don't see how Alshon fits into that in a way that will get him his normal fantasy production. I also don't think Meredith's going to get, you know, 15 targets a game, but 7-8 seems pretty likely at this point.
Yeah, and looking at another new player there in Chicago, Jordan Howard, he had his worst game for Chicago since becoming the uncontested starter, right along with Hoyer. Hoyer's in that same boat. Is there value tied together somehow to you? I mean, you mentioned that a little bit with the short passing game acting as the running game. Do you see that continuing?
You know, this is the first game I've sat and watched of Howard all the way through, and he looked bad, but I mean, he's produced so well to this point, and I think he's going to get, you know, he's going to get some catches out of the backfield, which is good. We didn't know he was going to get that at the beginning of the season. Kadeem Carey, you know, ran better than him, but you know, it was on a few touches, so I'm not reading too much into that. I think Howard's going to just get his opportunity. I'm, you know, as long as he's getting the bulk of the workload, which he didn't get last week, but he has gotten up until this point, I think even if Hoyer struggles, he'll be fine if he's getting those touches.
Yeah, I do think you need to temper your expectations in the next 2 weeks, you know, at Green Bay and against Minnesota. Those are not easy run defenses to face. But after the bye, Tampa Bay, a couple other decent matchups, I think that he's got a lot of potential moving forward. And you're right, the fact that they're willing to involve him in the passing game is pretty appealing from a fantasy perspective. Let's look forward to that game against Green Bay. Can we trust Hoyer in that situation, you know, on a short week? It's been a pretty positive matchup to go against Green Bay's pass defense, but we're talking about Brian Hoyer here still, you know?
Yeah, and they've been missing, I can't remember the cornerback's name, but he's been out. I don't know if he's going to be back. So I'm trusting him as a, you know, I would project him for a top 20 finish in against Green Bay, but I'm not projecting him for a top 10 finish this week.
Yeah, I'd say trust is a tough word right. to endorse, but you know, it is a positive matchup. I think that's difficult to ignore when you're, you know, ranking these guys or trying to figure out who you'd start over whom in your fantasy lineups. Now, you mentioned a top 20 week. We kind of glossed over this before, but we have what we call the QB finish game on the podcast here, and we try to predict how many of the quarterbacks' remaining games they'll finish in the top 20, and then of that, how many they'll be in the top 10. Do you care to venture a guess on top 20 finishes for Hoyer over the balance of the season?
Yeah, I think so. He's got 10 games left. Well, the Bears have 10 games left. I'm going to presume for this that he's starting all those.
That's fine.
I think I'd give him 6 in the top 20 and 3-4 in the top 10.
Yeah, I think that some of the matchups do look a little scary. I guess Minnesota in week 17 doesn't really count for fantasy purposes, so maybe we should only be looking at like how many of the next 9 he will finish in those top 20 and top 10 ranges. But I like where you're at. I might say 7 in the top 20 just because the schedule is relatively easy. But I think that his upside is a little limited just based on lack of skill. So I'll stick with you on the 3 top 10 finishes. Let's look forward to week 7 for some other teams, unless you got anything else on Brian Hoyer.
No, I think we covered him pretty extensively.
The first real big matchup that jumps out to me when I look at the slate for week 7 is New Orleans traveling to Kansas City. And we've seen the home road splits be a problem for Breeze in the past. Can we start him at Arrowhead? What's a fair expectation for that matchup?
Yeah, so I mean, Kansas City looked good last week. They've looked much worse at other points in the season. And I am maybe the lone voice out here in the wilderness saying that Drew Brees' home road splits are overrated. I get the dome thing, but you know, other dome quarterbacks like Matt Ryan have actually opposite splits. They're a little bit better on the road. I think a lot of that is just, you know, things that emerge, and we think that they mean a little bit more than they do. So I'm not looking really great on that so far in 2016, but I'm still sticking to my guns and saying those home road splits are a little bit overrated. His career is, you know, a 3 point per game difference, which I think is more in line with what we should expect going forward. All that said, I'm trusting him as a QB1. I think he'll be a top 10 quarterback this week against Kansas City. I know they've had, you know, they looked dominant and they've looked awful. And I think Breeze is still a really good quarterback. He still has tons of weapons, and I think I can't put him outside the top 10.
No, I'm with you. I think that sometimes we can really overblow things like those splits. There's nothing to prevent. Like, even if those splits are relatively indicative of how he plays, I don't think we can look at a matchup like this and just say that he has a 0% chance of, you know, outperforming expectations, right? You know, of putting up a quote-unquote outlier performance relative to his normal home road splits. I think for me, he'll be in the top 10 as well. I like most of his weapons. It just comes down to skill for me. All that stuff we talked about with Brian Hoyer, you know, maybe having top 20 upside, but not a whole lot of top 10 upside. Breeze is the opposite for me. Like, I think that top 20 is something that I would expect almost every week from him, including games at Arrowhead. And I would even expect him to, you know, put up a top 10 finish in that sort of situation more often than the guys who are less skilled than him, but who maybe don't have splits that are quite as pronounced. I think that, you know, Breeze isn't always going to play poorly on the road. That's just not how it works. He's a good quarterback. He's going to play well sometimes. I'd rather bank on that than, you know, try to predict the next Case Keenum blow up. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's look at, you know, more of a middling quarterback in a good matchup, and that's Joe Flacco. Presumably facing the Jets. I shouldn't say presumably. He's definitely going to face the Jets next week. But presumably this is a very good matchup for quarterbacks. You know, if these trends hold and Baltimore posts big passing numbers, my question for you is this. It's not so much about Flacco. It's more about who on his team is going to be the primary beneficiary from a receiving standpoint, because I don't really know who the Ravens' best receiver is.
Yeah, I don't know who their best receiver is either, but I know that the Jets' cornerbacks look pretty slow right now. So to me, that means if Mike Wallace is healthy, and I haven't seen the latest on him, I'm calling a Mike Wallace day. Other than that, we know Steve Smith, I think, is going to still be out. Pitta is probably going to get his, you know, high-end tight end 2 numbers. But if I'm putting my money on anybody in DFS, it's going to be Wallace.
Yeah, I like that call. I did a little bit of digging into, you know, who the Jets have faced this year. And in general, it's not really always been the same type of receiver, but it's usually been the best overall receiving option who gets the most work and posts the most fantasy points. You know, it's been AJ Green, and when Sammy Watkins was down in week two, it was Charles Clay, Travis Kelce for the Chiefs, Antonio Brown, and, you know, shout out CD Carter, the best receiver on the Pittsburgh Steelers, Sammy Coates, in that matchup. But in general, like, it doesn't necessarily slant towards wide receiver or tight end. It generally looks like the best receiver on the team is the one who gets the work. And I think that with the Ravens, you can either kind of direct that at Mike Wallace like you're doing, or you can direct it at Dennis Pitta and maybe buy into that Charles Clay, Travis Kelce trend. Mike Wallace and Dennis Pitta are both tied on the Ravens with 47 targets, so I think it could go either way, and I think you could feel comfortable using both. I mean, Pitta's the type of player who, if you have him, you're probably starting him anyway, based on volume, but I like the Mike Wallace call as well. All right, moving on. Let's get back to Colin Kaepernick, because, you know, we just saw him face the Buffalo Bills defense, and Buffalo's not great, but they're pretty solid on that side of the ball. Kaepernick in Week 7 gets the lowly Tampa Bay Bucks. I am going to ask you a simple question, Brian. Over under a finish of QB12 for Kaepernick in Week 7?
Man, there are a lot of good quarterbacks, but no. So there are a lot of good quarterbacks, and that means I'm going to put him outside the top 12. I think that's a really good line. I've started on my QB streaming piece, and I'm pretty excited about some other guys who are normally not top 12 finishes. So I think he's going to have a tough time cracking that top 12.
Yeah, and in general, there are a lot of good quarterback matchups next week. If you kind of look at the entire slate, a lot of the good defenses are playing against each other. Like, you have Houston and Denver facing off, you have Philly and Minnesota facing off, so we could see a lot of offensive production kind of across the board. So I'll take the under as well. With that said, Kaepernick will almost certainly be inside my top 20. I think that rushing upside, you know, plus, you know, whatever he gives you through the air against that bad defense is probably going to be worth starting in two quarterback fantasy leagues. That's not to say he doesn't have the upside to go big, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, maybe the biggest thing for him is he might unlock Torrey Smith's potential. He was just languishing with Gabbert. And at least Kaepernick can get the ball down the field. So hopefully, if Cap has a big day, I think it's going to be partially a Torrey Smith day.
Yep, I like that. Now, last one that I really want to touch on here is, you know, our weekly check-in on Matt Ryan. Somehow he's toppled, you know, all of the NFL's big, scary defenses, I think, except Minnesota at this point. Is there any chance of a letdown at home against San Diego?
Yeah, there's always a chance, but man, I'm not predicting it. He has drastically outperformed my expectations.
You and me both.
Yeah, I think he's just one of those, you know, examples of, we're actually not as good at predicting upside or estimating a player's upside as we think. You know, the story on him has always been, yeah, maybe he's a low-end quarterback one. He had a rough year last year, but really, what are you buying? You know, you're buying mediocrity, and it's not worth drafting. And, you know, we're not as good as we think at understanding how this game works. So I'm buying him for the rest of the season. He's probably going to be in my top six quarterbacks going forward.
Yeah, his schedule is largely good as well. You just talked about predicting maybe outlier good performances. I'm going to ask you to go the other way. If there was to be a game where Matt Ryan is going to let everybody down, if you look at their schedule, is there any game that jumps out at you, any particular matchup?
So, I mean, Philly looked good early on. They haven't looked as good since. That might be, you know, on the road at Philadelphia, yeah, that might be the one that I'm a little bit nervous about right before the bye week.
That's what I'm looking at, too. Looking ahead to the bye is what I'd be worried about.
Right.
Yeah, I think the only other one that possibly jumps out to me is a bit of a trap game is week 14 at Los Angeles. It, just because everybody to this point in the season has undersold their matchups with the Rams. Like, nobody shows up to play that LA team at all.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, and I think they have a respectable defense. So I could see that going south, too.
Yeah, no doubt. So that's all I really have, Brian. Is there anything else you want to touch on, looking back or looking forward? 2QB fantasy-wise?
No, I think that's about it. I am conceding that Blake Bortles is not a good quarterback at this stage in his career. I'm still comfortable with him as, you know, a top 18 fantasy option for 2016, and I'm glad I'm not invested in him in Dynasty.
Yeah, the people I feel really bad for are the guys who drafted Allen Hurns, because, like you said, Bortles is still usable, but, man, Hurns has just fallen off the map this year.
Yeah, I think everyone knew they were due for a regression. And then we just realized also that Bortles isn't any good, and now he can barely sustain Allen Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the hardest question to answer. It's like, I think Scott Pianowski from Yahoo talks about this all the time on Twitter. He'll say, like, yes, I understand that regression is coming, but the real question you have to answer is how much, you know, right? It's varying degrees.
Yes.
All right. Well, with that said, Brian, why don't you let folks know where they can find your work and where they can contact you?
Well, you can always get me on Twitter at BrianMaloneFF, and you can find my work most importantly at 2QBs.com, but also at RotoViz and Dynasty League Football, where I've been writing more and more about quarterbacks, it seems, lately.
Yeah. You want to tease anything that you got going on over there, Dynasty-wise?
I don't. You know, I do the weekly waiver wire article every week at DLF, except for this past week. I won't tease who I'm coming out with this week yet because I don't know for sure. But that's always a good read. People seem to like that. And then the one quarterback streaming article at RotoViz is also a weekly thing.
Nice. Yeah, we always want to try to touch on Dynasty, but for the most part, the folks at 2QBs are redraft-centric. So it's always good to kind of pick your guys' brains on that Dynasty stuff. You should definitely head over to DLF and check out Brian's work and everybody else's. They do a great job over there. But come on, we're all here for the 2QBs.com. That's TWOQBS. Brian, I do want to thank you for all your hard work. Encourage everybody to check out Brian's and everyone else's work at the site. We've got a really good crew of guys doing stuff for 2QB and Superflex Fantasy. Urge you, the listeners, to rate and review the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. You can follow us on Twitter, the site's Twitter at 2QBs. We record this podcast on Monday nights, usually during Monday Night Football. So, you know, if you're watching the game and any random questions come up, shoot them our way and maybe we'll try to get to them. You can follow your regular co-host, Joshua Lake, at Lake2QBs. You can find me at GregSauce. And you can always search us up on Facebook, give us a like there. Send us an email at 2QBs@gmail.com. Man, that outro seems like it gets longer every week, Ryan. I don't know what to tell you. But
let me throw one more thing in there, because I was just thinking about James Simpson wrote a really good article with maybe an even better title about Superflex and 2QB over at Dynasty League Football. So go check that out. I'm not going to give away the title because I don't want to ruin the best part of the article, but go check out the article too. And he's at 2QBs.com too.
Yeah, James is good people. Thanks, Brian. I appreciate that. And for Brian, for myself, for the absentee Lake, we are out of here. Good luck in week 7. Adios.